My name is Janice, and I'm an addict. I'm trying real hard not to cry right now. And they gave me this topic. It took me through a journey of where I've come from, even being in these rooms, and realizing that most of the decisions that I made as an adult were based on the feelings of a five-year-old kid who had been feeling left out, not good enough, disappointed, and unsure why she was even here, but had made a decision unbeknownst to herself that she was the only one that she could depend on, and lived her life like that. She grew up in Newark, New Jersey. And she grew up on South 11th Street in Newark, New Jersey. And when she was 2 years old, her mom was sent to a mental institution. And I remember standing on the street and watching my mother behind bars like an animal and having to talk to her from the street and what it felt like. It felt like somebody somewhere had taken the only person that could understand why I felt the way I did. And I was raised by my grandmother, who loved me beyond words. But somehow my grandmother's love didn't protect me from the feelings that I had as a kid, that I kept asking myself, why me? I was raised as an only child. And my memories of my father, this is after the disappointments of, I'm going to get you the coat, I'm going to get you the bike, I'm going to get you this, I'm going to get you that, and then take me to his girlfriend's house, and I watch her kids open the gifts that my father had promised me, and I got one plastic toy. The disappointment went so deep that I didn't know how to express disappointment. I only knew how to express rage. I grew up in an Italian-Irish neighborhood, and we were the only black family. We were the only black family. And when I went outside, I didn't know where I was supposed to fit in. And because of some stuff that went on in my house, I didn't know where I was supposed to fit in there either. So I built my own little world. I had my pretend friends that I went in the bathroom and I talked to, because they were the only ones that could understand what I was feeling like. So when I was introduced to my first drink at 7 years old, it felt good. And I said, now I have a way to get past what I'm feeling. By sixth grade, I was already doing cocaine, because being raised by myself, you know, I had relatives, and the kids thought that it was cool to beat me up, until the day that my grandmother said, if you want to fight, if you want to go outside, you better learn how to fight. And I started fighting. And I wasn't fighting for the privilege of going outside. I was fighting for my life, because I felt so alone. I remember standing in the window wondering what everybody else was doing. I remember wondering why my father didn't want me, because my last memories of him was ducking behind cars on the street to avoid me and my grandmother as we walked. At 9 years old, I was already doing adult things like going to pay the electric and gas bill and going grocery shopping, because my grandmother was 70 years old when I was born, so I was the one that had to do it. I remember going to school and getting straight A's, because that's where somebody patted me on the back and said I was going to be somebody great. They didn't care who my father was. They didn't care who my mother was. I didn't have any cousins in the room that were bullying me, because there were six of them and one of me. And, you know, I came from this strange situation where their aunt was a little crazy. I remember watching my mother and being afraid that she was going to turn into the monster, and feeling my skin crawl when she touched me, because it felt so foreign to me, and yet I loved her with all my heart. As long as I was drinking or using, I didn't have to feel any of that. And so as I grew up, this little girl still controlled how I felt. I was unaware that there was a little girl inside me whose name was Jamie, by the way, who still comes out every now and then as an adult with something as simply as, if you burn my steak, I got a problem with it. And Janice goes away and Jamie shows up, and it's good that I have friends who know me who will say, don't you say a word. I thank God for the journey of my life. I don't even care about the destination anymore, because the journey has been so great that it's in the valleys, it's in the mountains, it's in those valleys that I have grown painfully, longingly, struggling, however I had to get through them, because each time I went into the valley, God provided me the strength to hang on and to grow just a little bit more. I remember coming in here as a newcomer, and you know, because of this little girl, I was so hungry for somebody to love me, just like me, just a little bit. I'll do whatever you say, I'll do whatever you want. Because I still had the feelings of my uncle molesting me and my mother telling me, keep it a secret, because your aunt's already mad at him because of something going on. My cousin molested me for 3 years. Let's play house. And I loved my cousin. So every time he said play house, I went in the basement and I played house. I didn't know till I came in here that he had been molesting me. Because all I knew was my cousin loved me. Oh, man, y'all done set me up. I had all of these feelings inside of me. And then, obviously, I was a little different than some people. I knew I was different at 5 years old. I knew that I didn't feel the way the rest of my family felt. And that was just one more thing on the plate that made me desperate for somebody to just love me enough to tell me I was okay, because I didn't have the ability to tell myself that I was okay. I didn't have the ability to let myself know I was enough, just the way I was. And I grew up with this feeling. And so if you like me, sure, we could be in a relationship. Oh, you want candy? I'll be right back and steal the quarter out of my grandmother's pocketbook, because I had to buy you the candy to make sure that you liked me. Because I didn't have the ability to like myself. Everything was wrong. I didn't like my hair. I didn't like anything. I had this strange 5 different ways growing hair, and my aunts used to put perm and straightening combs in it to try to straighten it out, to manage it. And all I remember is sitting on the flower can and the straightening comb going bam, bam, and how my scalp burned. So I thought they were using it to abuse me. I didn't understand that they were doing the best that they could, because they didn't know anything else to do with it. And so I went to high school one day, and when I came home, this is how I came back. Because I promised myself no one was ever going to use my hair to hurt me again. Right? Nobody was ever going to call me half-breed again. Nobody was ever going to make me feel less than I was. So what I did was, I didn't put up a wall. I put up a wall to protect the wall. And I decided that if I think this way, because they taught me chess at an early age, and I thought that if I lived my life the way I play chess, no one would ever hurt me again. It was in that third step that I realized that I had tried to control everything and everybody in my life to make sure things went my way, only to find out that I wasn't God and I didn't have that ability, and it was time to surrender. I remember coming in here, and I still had those feelings of that little girl, and when my sponsor would tell me she would have a new sponsee, I would throw a tantrum like that 5-year-old girl in the middle of her shop. And she would ignore me, and I'd be like, can't you see me over here? I have a problem with this. But the more work I did, the more I found out that it was okay to feel the way I felt. It wasn't that I felt a certain way. It was how I responded to the way that I felt. I had grown up reacting to every feeling I had, and everything came out as rage. I didn't know how to express it any other way. All my life, that little girl just wanted to be loved. And she didn't recognize that she was loved, that she was cared about, because I didn't want for anything. You know, I didn't even know we were poor. I didn't understand that concept, because when my grandmother called my uncles and said I needed a new pair of shoes, I came home with 5 or 6 pair of shoes. When I woke up on Christmas morning, the house was brightly decorated with the new tree and a room full of toys and all this other stuff, right? And obviously they saw something in me that I thought was secret, because I didn't get Barbies and I didn't get the little dolls. I got chemistry sets and robots and stuff like that, right? So I thought that this great secret I was holding on to that I couldn't tell anybody else again, it would go on that list of dislike. I grew up, and I was the homophobe. I was the one that had already decided you weren't going to like me because of what you saw. And so I wouldn't go places and I wouldn't do things based on what I thought you were going to think. I put myself in a box that was so tight I couldn't even breathe. I felt like I was sitting in the corner of a room that only had one corner, and there was no windows and there was no way out. And so I had this temper, right, that I thought I can control. And so I dropped out of school and I went to the military, and I thought maybe this will help me with that anger issue, right? Well, I got locked up for choking somebody. So that didn't work too well. And I still had that feeling of I'm all alone. I don't know why. You know, and I love to read and I love to find things out. And, you know, I used to come to the table with the encyclopedia because I just love to read. I couldn't even eat a meal unless I was reading something. But when I walked out that door, I hid that because I didn't want anybody to know that I was blessed with a brain. You know, I had a little bit of smarts. I knew a few things. I needed you to think that I was just like everybody else. And yet when I got to that classroom, yeah, I was determined that I was not going to get anything less than an A, because I liked my fourth grade teacher calling me her little apple dumpling and pinching my fat cheeks. I liked that they told my grandmother that I could do anything, right? What they didn't know was I was so scared not to get it, because that would have been the last thing to go as to somebody paying me some attention. I was angry with my family because they didn't realize that this cute little kid that was going off to school and doing all these great things in school was getting high most days so that she didn't have to feel anything. And I took out my anger in ways like my cousins would come over from New York and I'd say, ooh, look in there, and lock them in a dark closet and go outside and play, you know. Or I would lock them out the back door with the dog and say, don't worry about it. If you don't move, she won't bite you. I went to a barbecue in 2011 and my cousin said, there she is. We were just talking about your evil ass. I thought my family had abandoned me, but the truth was I walked out of the house one day and I didn't come back for 20 years. But in between that, what I had done was when they came in the front door, I went out the back door because I didn't want them to see me, because I didn't want to have to sit there and watch them pretend that they liked me. I didn't even have vision enough to know that they really did love me. So I got here and I'm still trying to convince people that I'm the one. That if you just love me, I'm the one. I would do anything for you. And I was one of those addicts that had a job. I was one of those addicts that went to work every single day and worked overtime so that I could pay for my drugs, so that I could go to work, so that I could get high, so that I could go to work, so that I could get high, and so on and so forth. Because I had heard what people had been called when they came up and said, "Can you let me go?" for. And I wasn't going to let you do that to me. And then it gave me this thought that I don't understand how people can get high if they don't go to work. Why are you getting high and you don't have a job? And so I kept working, right? And I didn't see anything wrong with going to get some and using half of it before I went to work and taking the other half with me to work. I even had it delivered to work. I didn't see anything wrong with that. And what brought me in here is because I had seen people do some things, but the day that I stole half my rent money from myself and made sure I was the last one out the house so that I could tear the house up to make sure you thought that we had been robbed. There's no burglar anywhere that's going to come in and turn all the drawers upside down. And that's it. So I thought maybe perhaps I might have a problem. I never thought that my behavior was the biggest part of my problem and that I was just using to get past the feelings that were caused by all the situations I put myself in. I know the true meaning of every decision begins and ends with me. Everything in my life begins with a decision I make and ends with another decision I make. And I understand that nothing in my life changes until I become willing. And sometimes it takes a little time. See, so I went to work to get high, right? But I broke the law to try to convince somebody I was the one. I was so desperate to hold on to a relationship. Look, no normal people stay in 10-year relationships, right? And you spend the last 3 years of that relationship sleeping on the couch because you know 7 other people have been in the bed. There's something wrong with that. But I thought that's all I deserved. I've always been this big, right? And I was abused by a 4'11" person that I wouldn't put my hands on. I would be black and blue. And if I wasn't physically abused, I was mentally abused. And I thought, this is the best I'm ever going to get. Because when I look back, I couldn't see anything other than the lack of love and consideration and the just liking me for who I was. And so I come in here and I got 18 months clean, and y'all said don't get a relationship in a year, but I already had a relationship when I came in here, and I knew that they were cheating, so I was convinced that I can control how they felt about me. And after all, they were sleeping on their mom's house on the floor with their kids and their new grandkid, so I had a bright idea. I'm going to get you an apartment, I'm going to save you, and then you'll love me. I had this job where when I started, they told me there's 2 signatures on these checks so that you can't write yourself a check. Now, mind you, there's a little part in here that I forgot. I take medication so that I can act like I'm okay, right? And so the first time I took it was when I came into recovery. You know, I'm in treatment, and they said, we're going to give you a therapist, and we're going to send you and get you some medication, and everything's going to be all right. So since I had never taken medication before, I thought that when I felt better, I was cured, and I stopped taking the medication. I didn't know it makes you crazier than you were before you started taking it. And so my mind started telling me that that's a challenge. They want you to see if you can figure it out, right? So when that person didn't have enough move-in money, I wrote a check. And when they didn't have any furniture, I wrote another check. And their kids ain't had no clothes, so I wrote another check. Well, at the end of it, when the detective called me and said, we need you to come down Because we have some questions we need to ask you. I said, in regard to what? He said, well, it's in regard to the $20,000. And I said, no. Now, mind you, when I started taking the medication, the voices got louder. I'm walking around in circles. I'm thinking everybody's out to get me. I would go in the house and barricade the door so that they couldn't get to me, right? Now, this is before the FBI showed up. And so, little Jamie is in full effect. Because every time Janice gets hurt, little Jamie showed up. And so when the detective said $20,000, I said, no, by my calculations, it's only $12,000. Right? So he said, well, we need you to come down here. And I said, I can't make it. And I wound up, on the advice of someone else, in a moment of clarity, listening to somebody else. And I got a lawyer, and I turned myself in. Right? And I told you I worked to get high. I was always afraid to break the law. So as the FBI is processing me, they're saying, well, we don't understand. Usually a crime of this magnitude, you have a record. We couldn't even find a parking ticket on you. And I turned to her and I said, because I'm afraid to break the law. And she's looking at me, right? And she don't understand. I was not going to jail. I was not going to have to fight. I was not sharing my food. I was not doing none of that. And I'm claustrophobic, so I'm definitely not letting you lock me up. So, I get 5 years probation. And in that time, I started doing some work in here. And I was 18 months clean. And what really turned me on to this program, the first time I really felt love, genuinely love, was I told that story at my sponsor's anniversary. And right after it, somebody came up and said, I love you. And I said, did you hear what I just said? And he said, that's why I love you, because of your honesty. Right? And so I had a slight thought that all I got to do is show up and tell the truth, and you'll love me, and I don't have to do anything else. They might have something here. Right? So I continue with this program. And I'm in a sponsor family where you do the work. Ain't no writing it, okay, next step. You do the work. When I see it working in your life, then you can go to the next step. Because the steps are lived, they're not written. Right? And so I started doing the work. And in that first step, I realized that there was unmanageability all around me, and I needed to do something different. But the first thing I had to do was I had to admit that I was an addict. And when I got past that, I could admit some other stuff, right? And then when I got to that second step, y'all gave me that second step, you know, and that's the setup right here. Because I, with all the disappointment I had and with all the tantrums I had thrown, when I got to that second step, they were no longer necessary because I found some hope. And that hope took me to faith. And that faith gave me the ability to trust. And so when things came up, what I did, it talks about miracles, right? I started looking back at where I had already been and how it turned out. And I realized that God had always been blessing me. And all I had to do was show up and do my part. And because I had some hope, there was nothing in this world that I couldn't do. There was nowhere I couldn't go. And I mattered. When I got to that third step, there was no need for me to try to control anybody because I was responsible for me. I learned that all I had to do was the footwork and God was responsible for the outcome. And I could breathe again because I ain't had to sit and plan and sit and think and all this other stuff. It was just too much work. And I was glad to say, here, you take it. I remember a woman told me, she said, I want you to buy a newspaper. And I want you to go to the one ads. And if God is hiring help, then you join in. But if not, you take a seat and let him do the drive. And I started doing that. And things started to change. And it's not because anything changed out here. It's because my perception of life changed. Because when it talks about that perception and proportion, it talks about how I can take it this big and see it this big, and then I get overwhelmed and I go get one. I started seeing things for how they were rather than what I thought they were. And I started living in the here and now. And so I took that first and that second and that third step, and I ventured into that fourth step. And I came face to face with me. For the first time, I told myself the truth.
I'm so sorry. They called, and they're going to shut this meeting down if all of you against that back wall do not leave. You have to be in a seat. You must be in a seat.
I know. They just called on the radio. I know. I'm sorry.
So please.
Sorry, I appreciate that.
Please.
The convention center called me.
Thank you, everybody, for your cooperation. Please, if you don't have a seat, you're over occupancy. You must exit. Sorry.
Sorry.
Sorry for interrupting.
I'm going to help you out now.
So when I got to that fourth step, and in that first paragraph in the basic text, when it talks about the purpose of the fourth step, it clears up the confusion and the contradictions of my past so that I could live in the here and now. I started writing, and I came face to face with Janice, and I saw Jamie for who she was. She was a little girl that had always guided my steps and told me what to do. And in that, I was able to talk about the feelings, and in that, I was able to understand why I did the things I did, and in that, I was able to see that I needed to do something different, and I started changing. I got to a point where I could see how I was going to act in any given situation long before the situation even started, and I started doing something different. Y'all told me if I practiced these principles, my life would change. Well, I practiced these principles, and I changed. And it made my life change. And it has gotten better. And it has not been easy. And when they talk about clean time and recovery, I know I have fought for every inch, every day, everything, right? It has not been easy for me. I have struggled every year that I've been here. And the little girl shows up every now and then, but the adult has learned how to embrace the little girl and give her permission to sit right here and tell her that I'm going to take care of this. You sit right here, it's going to be all right, but the adult is going to act on this one. I don't know when it happened. I don't know how. Like moments just like this, Jamie would have been up here throwing a tantrum. I don't want to do this. You know, and stuff that I thought made me unusual, I'm learning to address and embrace. I like who I am. I like the person I'm growing up to be. When I look in the mirror, I like the person that's looking back. When I look in the mirror, I can tell that little girl that life is good, and you can sit there and you can enjoy the peacefulness of being a little girl, finally. I've embraced it to the point where I got kicked out of Toys R Us for playing with their toys. I didn't see anything wrong with me riding that beanbag down the aisle. I didn't see anything wrong. He said, push me, whine me, and I did. And I guess they didn't like all the noise I was causing in the store, and they asked me to leave, and it was okay. So I'm still a Toys R Us kid, but I've learned to embrace. You know, I've been kind of crying since yesterday afternoon because somebody was sharing and took me back to that injured little girl that was trying to figure out what my life is going to be like and what's going to happen to me and who's going to love me. And in that, you know, and then somebody else came through and they just kicked the door open. Now I'm in full tears. I can't even stay for the Friday night meeting. I got to get up and walk out because I'm just flooded with tears and emotions and thoughts because that little girl is saying, hey, all of this stuff happened, and what happened, and where are we? And the adult said, we're done. We're healing. We're growing up. And it feels so good. I once said to a friend that, I didn't know so many people love me, and she said, they've always loved you. You're just catching up. I am so grateful for my life. I call God the original OG. Because he goes through and change whole neighborhoods. And ain't nothing nobody can do about it. Sometimes when I'm going through something, you know, I say, God, I can't do this. I'm going to give this one to you. And I can laugh, kind of chuckle, and walk away where I would be trying to defend myself. And so I have things that happen like this in my life now, right? I have a job, and I love my job. But I had a supervisor that was the supervisor from hell. She worked there 8 months. And for 8 months, I walked like this, right? I couldn't stand. I couldn't walk without a cane. They were talking about amputating my leg. They were talking about running all these tests. They couldn't figure out what was wrong. And they finally decided that she was crazier than anybody else there, and they fired her. Right. 2 days after they dismissed her, my leg stopped hurting. And it has not hurt since. These are the things that happen in my life. I know that every time I get down and I pray to the God of my understanding and I ask for his help and I ask him to guide me through a situation, my view of life has changed to the point where I no longer look at why this and why that. I enjoy the journey so much that I'm sure some of y'all went through tunnels when you got here, and I always picture the Holland and Lincoln Tunnel because I remember going through the tunnel coming from the club, right? I think it was the Paradise Garage or something like that. And there was no other cars in the tunnel, right? And so we're driving. We scared to turn back, but we know we got to go ahead, and the walls are wet. And we're thinking that maybe there's a hole in the tunnel, but we never stopped driving forward. And then we started seeing the light on the side of the tunnel to let us know that we were coming out. But that's how I look at my life. It's a tunnel. I only got to go halfway in. The other half is coming out. And if I just hang on and do what I got to do and pray and trust the God of my understanding, he's going to guide me through each and every time. Because when I look back, he always has. My life is a miracle because I'm not using. I'm not standing down there on that ground throwing a tantrum. I'm not wondering why I'm not loved, because I love myself enough at the beginning of the day that it don't matter what you think. I ain't got no $1 million. I don't have a whole lot. I'm still trying to fix my credit. But I'm richer than I ever imagined myself to be. I got more in my life than anybody in the world. I turned 61 years old on Tuesday. I have 4 grandkids. And I have this beautiful little great-granddaughter that won't even let me use my own phone, and she's only 17 months old. And she's the only one in my life that can get away with telling me what to do. We ride around, and I got a little road rage. I do. And we ride around. I have her in the back seat where she can see me. And I'm turning her on to Mary J. Blige and the Delphonics and, you know, all the good groups, right? Where music made sense. And I'm bopping my head and I'm, you know, going through my motions. And I look back and she's... right? And I realized that I got to watch what I say and what I do. Because even at 17 months, she got a little road rage. You know? She don't like it when you got to stop the traffic. So, I guess, looking at my life and how I live, the things that used to be monumental aren't that important anymore. The little things just don't matter. You know, I get up every day glad that I see another day of life. I get another shot at living. And I saw this thing that said, life is not how many breaths you take, is how many moments take your breath away. Right. And that's how I try to live my life. I love how I'm living. I love the person I'm growing up to be. I am no longer afraid that you're not going to like me because I don't need your permission to live. When I went back to my family, I was able to look them in the face and embrace them. And the things of the past no longer matter because I'm still standing and I'm still here. And that little girl is off playing hopscotch or three flies up or whatever it is kids do, but it's definitely not video games. And the adult is free to live her life. I dropped out of college after a year and a half. I just started back in January. Yes. And I'm working on my degree. Yes. I love my life. I wouldn't trade any minute, any second of it for anything in the world. Because it's brought me to who I am, right here, right now. And I got a beautiful journey. Thanks for letting me share.